Kerry Mountjoy.
That's wow. Right. Mountains of joy.
welcome everyone to another episode of the Human Experience podcast. This is your host Eldin Hassa, and I am actually in the studio live in person with an amazing Kerry Mountjoy, Mountains of Joy.
Ta-da!
I've been here actually a couple of hours, 3 hours already. We talked about business. We had another podcast recording, and podcast host Kerry Mountjoy, she gave me such an amazing honor to travel from London to be with her on her podcast as well. So we said, since I already traveled, we're going to have a recording of her on my podcast, The Human Experience. So I'm very honored to have amazing Kerry Mountjoy as my guest on my podcast, and I'm looking forward to having her explain everything, how her journey of her healing process went, how she transformed her life from kind of her hero's journey, her human experience, because she's absolutely amazing, owner of multiple businesses. She's thriving in life, in property, in real estate. She does coaching, public speaking, live events. She has a lot of clients. She's certified in, I think, Reiki, Rapid Transformation System, many other kind of certifications. And most importantly, she is a person who relentlessly works on herself, on her improvement, on her transformation, and elevate her existence in this human experience. So welcome, Kerry Mountjoy.
Oh, thank you so much for that incredible introduction, Alison. I really, really appreciate that. And there was a time where I would have been cringing as you were saying all of those nice complimentary things about me. And from doing the inner work on myself and taking accountability for myself, I everything that you said about me then, I thought, yeah, that's true. Yes, that's true. And it felt really, really good. And it has taken me, you know, it's taken me a good while, bit of a bumpy journey to get there. But and when I kind of think of where I came from, to feel how I felt when you just introduced me, then I never thought I could ever feel good about that. So thank you for that amazing introduction, and thank you for that reminder, and thank you for coming up to the to our studios here in Henley and Arden. It's just been a phenomenal day, and I've been really, really looking forward to it all week. So thank you.
Well, absolute pleasure. It's an honor to have you on my podcast, and yeah, I feel like we are like two peas in the pod,
yeah,
and lifelong friends. You know, here is to the most amazing friendship for life. And, you know, as the audience know me already, they know I am very avid into self-improvement, self-development.
Yeah.
And I also surround myself with like-minded people that we can kind of be each other's cheerleaders, and we can help each other to evolve and grow and have an amazing human experience, which is what life is all about. So for our listeners and for our viewers, I'd like to ask Kerry if she could share what inspired her to be where she is today and to become who she has become, very successful in every area of her life. And I'd like the audience to know what inspired you.
If I had to just pinpoint one thing that inspired me, it was the that amongst all the chaos of my upbringing and my life, there was always a knowing within my body, not within my mind. There was always a knowing that there was more for me in life. And I remember having that feeling. I was about 11 years old. We were living in a council flat in Birmingham. We always lived in council estates. And we were in a three-bedroom council flat. There was my mum, my dad, me, I'm the eldest, my brother, my sister, my nan and my uncle. My nan was a really old lady. My uncle was a paranoid schizophrenic. My mum was an alcoholic. And my dad was a, I would say he was a functioning alcoholic. He never missed a day off work, but he drank every day. And I remember being in the bedroom that I shared with my nan and my sister. There was my bed, my sister's bed, my nan's bed, and a commode in between the two beds. And I remember looking at myself in the mirror on the dressing table, and I was 11 years old. It was just before my nan died. And I remember it as vividly as it almost happened yesterday. And life was chaotic. I remember just knowing that there was going to be more for me in life, more than this, more than what my parents, who were lovely, like great people, a bit crazy, a bit chaotic, had not done any work on themselves. I knew that there was more for me in life than this, and that there was more for me than what I'd been currently shown at that point in my life. How? I had no idea, but I just had that knowing.
I loved it. I loved it. You kind of, from very young age, you knew, but at the same time, you knew that how is not a part you need to figure out there and then. So you didn't kind of feel anxiety or kind of feel like incapacitated because you were feeling overwhelmed. How? Like, why is this happening to me? How am I ever going to get out of these circumstances? You just knew there is more, there is better. And you kind of embraced the human experience, the kind of life journey at age 11. Incredible. Yeah. And, you know, I can see that how you speak about the childhood and the experience you've had growing up, I can feel that and observe there is no emotional charge. Because for a lot of people, if they have had those experiences and those circumstances, they would have labeled them as a trauma, as a traumatic experience, like a tremendous traumatic experience. And they would probably still be reliving the memories of the past in the present moment, feel those anxieties and feel kind of, you know, like it's happening right here, right now. So I'd like to ask you if you can delve a little bit deeper in your journey and, like, this is sharing what you did in your journey of the human experience to heal these wounds and these traumas, because definitely they were traumatic for a child to be in that environment.
Oh, yeah, incredibly traumatic.
And then also what some of the tools that you kind of learned over the years that you still apply today so we can give more value to the audience.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that was my knowing, my deep knowing at age 11. And from that point, I had many more life experiences, some great, some painful, and everything in between. So my healing journey didn't, I think because I had been brought up in that environment, I kind of thought that's all I deserved and that's all I was ever going to get, because this is what life kept showing me. So we'd moved around a lot to different council houses, and there was chaos, there was dysfunction within the home. I went into care with my brother and sister for a while my mum got tried out from being an alcoholic for the first time. And then we moved again, and then my nan died, and my nan was probably, you know, we only need one stable person in our life, really, don't we? And that was my nan for me. And when she died, it was my mum lost the plot even more, bless her, because she'd lost her support network. And there was even more chaos. And I then went, when a lot of my friends were like doing alcohol, and way back then when I was growing up, there wasn't so much like drugs around, but people would use other different substances. And thankfully, I never went that way. I think because I seen how damaging alcohol was within the home, I felt quite repelled against that. So I was very, very shy, had quite a low self-esteem, never really believed in myself. But what I did have was this kind of fire in my belly, and I have always had a lot to say about myself, for myself, Alden. So I was always ready to stick up for myself, because growing up on council estates, you had to learn how to stick up for yourself, basically, because you used to get beaten up, or there'd be somebody want to bully you. And yeah. I was bullied at school because I was constantly at different schools.
And then at council estate, and that inside your home as well.
Inside the home. Inside.
So yeah. You were almost like constant experience of fight or flight.
Yeah, exactly. And so I learned how to control my outer environment and be a people pleaser. So I then learned to people please, to keep things, my external world, as calm as possible so that I could feel safe. And I learned to do that from a very, very young age. And this is how incredible and powerful the mind is. It will keep, its job is to keep us safe away from danger and towards pleasure and safety. And my mind learned at a very young age that if I was, I was a good girl and I did all the right things, then I would be safe. That isn't necessarily true, but this is how my mind kept me safe throughout my life. And then at the age of 15, we'd moved again. I then fell in love with the boy next door, and I had my rose-tinted glasses on. I was a very naive, very inexperienced 15-year-old, and through my rose-tinted glasses, I thought, oh, someone finally loves me. It felt nice, it felt good, it felt like an escape. I can finally get out of this chaotic environment, and I thought everything would be amazing. And I put my rose-tinted glasses on. I'd watched a lot of Disney films by that point, and everyone has a happy ending. And I basically went out of the frying pan into the fire, because as we were talking about earlier, my normal was mum and dad, they were either laughing and happy and having fun, or they were drunk and fighting and being nasty to each other. So that was quite familiar for me. So I then went into this relationship that was, it felt nice and fun and safe, but that actually was an abusive relationship. That was physically, mentally and emotionally abusive, because I didn't know anything different. I genuinely thought, this is normal.
This is normal, yeah.
This is normal. It's familiar. This is what I deserve. This is all I've ever known. So this is must be what real life is like. And then from that relationship, I had a son. I was 17 when I had my son. And the relationship just continually got worse and worse and worse. Very jealous, very possessive. And again, it was intuitively, I knew this was not right. But my outside world was reflecting, well, this is just what kind of happens. This is normal. And that relationship lasted for about 5 years. And eventually I pretty much just escaped, really. And, you know, and we are great friends now. We've talked a lot about what was going on for him and what was going on for me. And we share grandchildren together, and he's been there and supported me in my life, and I've supported him, and we are great friends now. But at the time, that was not the case. And I eventually plucked up the courage to escape and run away from that and seek sanctuary and safety, which I did. But then when I did that,
this is with your son, right?
This was with my son, yeah. And then when I'd done that, I thought, once I get out of this situation, it's going to be great. It will be the solution. But what I didn't realise was that was the starting point. Everything. It's not like I'd escaped all of the trauma that I'd experienced up until that point, or up until we met. I then had to really, there was a whole host of other crap I had to deal with.
Yeah, like, and that's when my journey changed started. The external environment, but yeah. You have not changed the internal environment. The internal.
In my mind, I thought, once I get out of here...
Well, that's what many people do. They think just by changing a job or changing a boyfriend, changing a wife, changing a husband, that it's going to be a solution, but they have not changed.
No. So I was still that small child that was trying to be a people pleaser so that I could control my environment to stay safe. I was still a person that thought I was not good enough, low self-esteem, and had allowed someone to be abusive to me because I thought that was normal. And when I eventually got away from that, the reality of that was actually quite profound. And it wasn't what I thought my life was going to be. And that was the time then where I had to start doing some work on myself. And that started in a really basic form of just going to a meditation class.
Wow.
So I was about 22 then, and I met this amazing woman at my college. I was studying to be a social worker, actually. So I was doing psychology, sociology, and I'd done a BTEC before that. And then I actually did go on to train to be a social worker. And through all of that, I started just doing meditation, and I used to go to meditation classes. And through that, I was able to get out of my mind and start feeling that body connection that we talk about. And that was the very, very beginning for me of kind of taking accountability, feeling the feelings, and just having an intention to feel, just to feel even one tiny bit better about myself, and start that journey of loving myself, which has been a very long journey, and it will be a journey that I will continue for the rest of my life.
Wow. So would you say, because a lot of people who are subscribers to my podcast, they actually practice meditation, and on my podcast I have many guided meditations, and those are like the most downloaded and most like repeat kind of listened and viewed. So would you say that one of the tools that still today you kind of feel it was beneficial in your journey of healing and transformation was meditation? Yeah,
it was the gateway for me. It was the gateway to know thyself, self-awareness, self-acceptance, to really connect with me, get out of my own mind, and to start really becoming present, and start that journey. And meditation is something that I still go back to, and I just do it for myself now in my own way. And I do listen to guided meditations as well, but it's one of those powerful tools that I think once you experience it, doesn't matter where you are in the world, it comes with you. You just do it.
Absolutely.
Get on with it or just be it.
One of my first teachers who taught me meditation, because I'm a scientist, so I'm very pragmatic.
Yeah.
And I said, what's the purpose of meditation? And I love that answer and still sticks with me every single day, is to be in a permanent meditative state with your eyes open.
Yeah.
And that hit me because... Mm. You know, for most people, they think it's like something you do. It's like, oh yeah, I do meditation.
Yeah.
It's not something you do. It's basically, if you do it correctly and you don't get addicted to an outcome, you know, like, oh yeah, I'm doing it right or I'm doing it wrong, and you just have an experience, and it's a process of evolution.
Yeah.
And it is actually, in scientific terms, it does help you with rewiring your brain. It does help you with your emotional regulation, and it does help with a lot of like healing, because you become aware, as a Tibetan name kind of translation, is like the word meditation means to become aware of.
Yeah.
So as you are becoming aware of, your inner self, your higher self, your dominant thought processes, your dominant emotions, and you can do also some kind of introspection, thinking about not only your past, but also thinking about romance in your future,
yeah.
You know, the future you'd like to create. And when you are in this highly elevated state where your heart rate is in a highly coherent state and your brain is in a highly coherent state, you can actually project the best vision of your future in that it's like a self-induced trance.
Yeah.
And I know you are trained in hypnotherapy and other modalities.
RCT hypnotherapist.
And I know that you help people through your techniques to induce the trance hypnotic state.
Yeah.
But the form of meditation, there are various forms, obviously, it could be used for the same. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, I certainly would agree. So when I'm working with a client with RTT, we take them into through an induction, but a massive part of the process is to it's about kind of reframing an event.
Cognitive reframing, isn't it?
Yeah. Reframing an event that you replay and repeat on a loop.
Yes.
And then
you assign a strong emotion.
An emotion.
To that loop de loop.
Yeah. To the story. And then you then attach a narrative to the story and then emotion to the story. And most people, when they tell me their story, I ask them, so how many times on average would you say that you've told this story? Because you're incredibly good at it. They've embellished it, they've put sparkles and sprinkles and cherries on top. And I know that because I've done this myself as
well. We've all done it.
And as they're even telling the story, you can see them welling up and they're getting really emotional about it. So part of the process is to, okay, let's really look at this story. We're going to project it onto a screen. So we're going to take the emotion away.
We're going to objectively look at the screen.
Objectively look at it as though we're zooming out. And we're looking at this story being played on a screen, which is just the next step to kind of just see
dissociate, of like that's not your identity. You are just looking at it as an objective observer.
Exactly. And that in it, just that one step in itself, Alden, is just so powerful.
Because it's not something they normally do.
No.
Is they always internalize. Like self-identify.
Yeah.
With that story, with that memory, with that trauma, isn't it?
Yeah.
And for the viewers and listeners, just so to understand, the RTT stands for Rapid Transformation Technique.
Rapid Transformational Therapy.
Yeah. Okay, technique therapy. Yeah. Yeah. So Rapid Transformation Therapy, it's very, very powerful. I use a version of it that I kind of created, myself.
Mm.
Mine is called RTP, Rapid Transformation Process.
Right. Yeah.
But yes, so very, very powerful.
Yeah.
Very powerful. And, you know, cognitive reframing and detaching and then detaching the emotions.
Yeah.
It's kind of like stepping out of the jar and looking at the label.
Yeah.
You're reading the label, seeing yourself through the eyes of someone else.
Exactly.
Very, very powerful. So wait, before you began the work that you do today, and you obviously you helped loads of people and you do live events and you go public speak and teach about mindset and all of these beautiful things, were you using these kind of modalities and therapies where you were seeing coaches and therapists to help yourself as well, to help on your journey?
Of course, so I, like yourself, I believe that I don't believe in fake it till you make it. And I believe that if I'm going to be working with people and serving them, then I've got to be doing this work for myself. I've got to walk my talk. Because there's a lot of people out there that talk a great talk, but behind the scenes, they're not doing any of this. And to me, that's just BS. And that does not connect with my values and what I'm about.
Absolutely.
And that's why I will always say to people that I work with and people that I speak with, I'm an open and honest book. And I will be continually working on my stuff until the day I take my last breath.
Yeah.
And I will embrace it and I will enjoy it. And it might be a bit bumpy and I might cry and get a little bit emotional.
It gets messy sometimes.
A bit snotty.
When things come up.
But that's okay.
Yeah.
But that bit's temporary.
Yes.
Once you've done that and then you're over that hump and you've you know, you've kind of had a good cry, the phenomenal feeling of freedom.
Absolutely.
That's true freedom for me.
Absolutely.
And I'm...
And sense of wholeness as well,
yeah,
isn't it?
And just peace, you know, that's when I've probably experienced real peace and freedom. And I'll be continually working on myself for the rest of my life. But skipping back, I've done lots of... I've had counselling for bereavement, which was great. Talking therapy, it was good when I lost my mum. But I didn't really get that much from it in a deeper way.
Yeah,
so
didn't deal with the root cause.
No, it was just talking about how I felt on going through the story.
Mm.
And what I found was it compounded the story. And then when I'd finished the session, I then went away and
I had more questions than... Yeah. Yeah, that's what therapy does.
I was thinking about it for days and weeks after.
Because
so,
you were reliving the experience,
yeah,
and feeling the emotions as you were talking through it. So the deeper,
yeah,
you were delving into,
mm,
the more you were experiencing it physiologically.
Yeah.
And then you would leave. Oh, your time's up.
Yeah.
And then you would leave and you would be... you know, ruminating for days in those juices, and then you attend the next session a week later, perhaps.
Yeah, and it's like the scab has been picked off. It's just starting to
bleeding.
Heal,
and
it's the
bleeding.
Scab has been picked off, and no one's helping me to put a bandage or a plaster over it because my hours are.
Not only the plaster.
Yeah.
What you actually were saying unconsciously. How do I heal this wound? I don't want the blood to keep,
yeah,
gushing out.
Yeah.
Forget even the plaster, because that's even like a temporary
exactly.
thing. So, what do,
yeah,
I do? And so, when you began to kind of consciously or unconsciously have these questions, how did your human experience then change? What did you do?
Well, what I done after that is I started to kind of think, well, I need to do something. The pain, it's too painful in here. It's too painful in here. I need someone that is going to be able to help me to deal with this pain. I was doing meditation. I was reading books. I was doing the yoga, which was very freeing physically as well. But it still wasn't kind. All of these things, connecting with nature, which is something I just absolutely adore. All these things were fantastic ingredients and essential ingredients. But the core ingredients, like you can't make... a cake without eggs and flour, and it was almost like the eggs and flour were missing. I had the topping, I had the icing, I had the jam and the cream in the middle, I had the sprinkly bits on top, but my cake was flat and it was just had no air and it had nothing in it. I needed the eggs and the flour, and for me the eggs and the flour was about working with a transformational coach that was helping me to really get beneath, really step into courage, be vulnerable, allow myself to surrender to all the story that the mind is telling me, and to feel the feelings. And I started working with my coach, who I still work with today, and I'm part of his crew, probably over nine years ago.
That's
and that
amazing.
Was the real, real deep work. Prior to that, I'd done... Tony Robbins event, actually, Unleash the Power Within, a 5-day event in London. And that was, even though we were in a room of about 6,000 people, that was a massive, oh my goodness, that knocked my socks off. So that was a couple of years before I worked with the transformational coach, but that was the real part of really getting to the deep stuff. And there was a lot of stuff that I'd shoved down and ignored and used food to stuff those emotions down. Sugary food, cake and chocolate, and alcohol as well. When I was younger, I would just go out and just get blinding drunk. And that was another way of escapism. And I did that not knowing that it wasn't a good thing for me to do, because I was just numbing out for that period of time. And then after that would come guilt and shame. And then all those traumatic feelings and beliefs, those core beliefs that I'd carried around with me, would pop back up again. And I think sometimes I didn't know, Alden, I didn't know that there was a solution, because I didn't really understand what the problem was, because I didn't have anyone around me to hold me and say, actually, we're living a lot of childhood trauma and abuse here, and this type of therapy or this type of person is going to be fantastic for you, but these things that you're doing are not fantastic for you. I kind of had to figure it out along the way, and it was a bumpy, bumpy journey, but that was the journey that was meant for me, and I wouldn't change any of it, because I learned so much about myself along that journey.
Beautiful. I love it. I love what you described. And yeah, your experience was, as you said, it was meant to be that kind of experience, yeah, as well. But I could see that even when you were doing like a talk therapy, you kind of knew that this isn't really working for me. I'm not really, because as you were saying, you're going into this cycle of, yeah, using food, mm-hmm, sugary food,
yeah,
or alcohol to kind of numb the pain, and there would be this cycle of feeling guilty, you know, maybe feeling even, you know, more, you know, insecure, lack of self-love, beating yourself up, yeah, about things, self-criticizing, how all could I that. Be so stupid doing, yeah, all of this, and then maybe from being in those altered states, you know, through food and alcohol, then you would make maybe wrong choices, which then would, yeah, affect your life in other areas of your life. So talk more about that, please.
Well, what I did was I attracted, again, the wrong life partner.
Okay.
Because I was so...
You were a work in progress.
Yeah, I was a work in progress, and knew somewhere in within my body that there was more for me than this. My mind and my familiar experiences and patterns in life led me to be attracted to people that were also wounded and, yeah, traumatized. And then
kind of like a male version of you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that is what happened. And every time I would think, this person is broken, this person is damaged, and I genuinely never really thought it was anything to do with me, and that is the absolute truth, I always thought that I'm working on myself, this person's broken, this person needs to work on themselves, when really it was me mirroring and projecting, because you can only see in others if you hold that thing within yourself.
True.
And we'd kind of connected through, we connected from a hopeless place within ourselves, and that's probably what felt familiar. And so my daughter's dad.
Yeah, we have lots in common, right?
Yeah.
We can help each other heal. We're birds with broken wings. Yeah, we can help each other heal.
And I then, because of my pattern to control the environment, so that I could then feel safe, and the people pleaser that I'd learned from a very young age, I then went into fix-it mode. I'll fix you because you're broken.
Maybe that was the part of the attraction.
Probably, yeah.
I can tell you my experience, that it was like that.
Yeah.
I was attracted to, because for me, helping person heal and fix the girl that, yeah, I was with, it was kind of like a need for receiving love, yeah, receiving attention.
Like validation.
Mm. Now she's going to love me. She's going to feel like I'm worth, yeah, something. Mm. And I was confusing the every relationship I was in before I met my wife, which is now 10 years ago, over 10 years. It was more like transactional.
Yeah.
It was more like kind of like, I will love you if, and I will love you when, and
yeah.
I will love you if you do or if you don't.
It's all very conditional,
and,
isn't it?
And so that was my experience up until the moment I spent 12 months in deep healing to heal all those traumas,
yeah.
which were some from childhood and most from adult relationships in romantic relationships. So I totally relate to everything you said,
yeah.
and it's absolutely necessary to continue to be on the journey, but not just journey of introspection and having insights,
mm-hmm.
but we understand from the work that we do in our background and our research and training and our certifications that equally as important, or if not even more important, is what are the tools? What can I do?
Mm-hmm.
Daily, incremental transformation, incremental changes, incremental mm-hmm. steps, and over time, I can then improve. And it's kind of like still work in progress,
yeah.
never-ending kind of journey. But then that makes you feel self-empowered.
It does. And when the awareness came that, hold on a second, I'm the creator of everything external to me, which was a bombshell. Because I'd been pointing and blaming everyone else, my childhood, my parents, the council estate. And there's always three fingers pointing back at you when you're pointing at someone else. And when my friend actually told me that, and it was like a bombshell. And when I thought, yeah, the change needs to happen with me first. For me to see anything different out here, it all starts to happen, has to happen within. And that was a profound moment. And I had to, the very first thing that I just knew that I needed to work on to be able to do just that one step was forgiveness. Forgiveness was a thing that just, we all know, if we really sit with ourselves and say, okay, what is it that's really holding me back? Most of us know this, we do. And I knew that it was forgiveness. I was very angry with my mom, being an alcoholic. Every day I would ask her, beg her to not be drunk when I got home from school. And every day she would promise me. And every single day I got home from school and she would be drunk. And for me, I was very angry with that because I thought she was a liar. She didn't love me. I wasn't important. And her drinking was much more important than anything else.
Yeah, I wasn't worthy. If I was worthy, if she loved me, she would have kept her promise.
She'd have kept her promise, and she's telling lies again, and that makes me feel not good enough.
Yeah, if I was good enough, so it kind of like you took responsibility on your own shoulders, mm. that young child,
yeah,
that to say, you know, kind of like maybe if I am better, maybe I can do something to please her, maybe I can do something.
If I'm a good girl, yeah.
You know, even if I receive mental, emotional, physical abuse from her and from my environment, maybe I deserve it because I was not good enough. Maybe I need to be better. I need to be a good girl.
And then I would then build all of this anger inside me, and I would be really cheeky to my mom. I would then, that would come out in frustration. When I'd get home from school and then she'd be there drunk, I would just be so angry because she's lied to me again. She's let me down. This makes me feel absolutely horrendous, like shit inside. And I would then be really cheeky and I would swear at her and I would just tell her that she's a liar, and I would be very, 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 very cheeky. She'd get very cross with me for being very cheeky and disrespectful and swearing at her and probably calling
her
names.
And she would swear back, and then you would have this like a volleyball match of cursing each other, right?
Yeah. And then we'd have an argument, and this was probably from about the age of 11, 12. We'd be having this argument and nothing ever changed.
And it was for years the same, right?
For years.
So that forgiveness, with the process and your journey, your healing journey and transformation related to forgiveness, was it just forgiveness towards your mother or all the members of the family, and then also, most importantly, forgiveness, self-forgiveness?
It was mostly towards my mom, because as a child, you cannot understand addiction. She was an addict.
Of course, yes.
I couldn't comprehend that. I made it very personal. It was all about her relationship with me. So a massive part of it was forgiveness and understanding that my mom had her own traumas, and she drank for her own reasons. I'll never know what they are. She died 23 years ago. I was 29. Not from alcoholism, by the way. Ironically, her liver was the last organ to fail.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. She had stopped drinking at that point for about four or five years. So I had to really learn to forgive and understand and meet my mom where she was at and meet her with compassion and kindness. And that was a process. And when I started to do that, I thought, wow.
Did you feel some kind of release within your body, almost like when you were beginning the process of forgiveness?
I felt, if I had to describe it physically, it felt like my shoulders would have been up here. And then as I forgave and released, my shoulders dropped, my breathing would drop into like my lower body abdomen, rather than just this shallow breathing. Yeah. And I actually felt physical tightness around my heart, around my actual heart
loosening
space,
the grip.
Loosening and letting go. And then followed by that would typically come tears of relief, tears of actual love
healing.
For my mom. And
compassion
for my mom, who had three children under 5 years old. My dad was such a grafter. He worked and he brought them in, and he would sometimes have to work away. And I suddenly saw a different side, and I thought, bloody hell. She'd done the best job that she could do with the tools
the
and resources that she had under the circumstances with three kids, not a lot of money, and on her own a lot because my dad worked away. And I just thought, wow, that's incredible. And so I started to really appreciate and meet her with kindness and compassion. And I'm going to say, we weren't easy kids.
Yeah.
I was very strong-minded, always had something to say, and that hasn't changed. My brother, whose birthday it was yesterday, he was feral, absolutely wild, this little boy was. And then my sister, she was just very self-sufficient. I think my sister just learned at an early age that I've got to sort myself out here because all these people are nuts. And that's how it rolled. And when I started to look at that and then look at the funny stories, and because there was a lot of funny stories when I look at in between it all, I started to feel different. My heart space was lighter, and that's where the forgiveness really came in. And I have no anger towards how my mum was or how my dad was and the stuff that they did, because underneath all of that chaos, the moving around, the alcoholism, the arguments, the going into care and coming back out of care, I must say as well. We were loved in amongst all that chaos. Me and my brother and my sister have sat and talked about this a lot. We all felt love. Okay, it was nuts. It wasn't really a safe environment all the time, but we definitely felt loved. And I think that, for my mum to be able to have done that, and my dad, he'd done his best as well. I looked at it from a different perspective, and that was where my healing journey really started. And I started to really appreciate my mum for who she was and what she'd actually had to encounter on a day-to-day basis. And then sadly, I was only starting to appreciate her when I was about 20, I was about 26. And then she died quite suddenly. When I was 29, she was 54.
Wow.
So that was then, for me, I'd only just started to really get her and appreciate her. And my forgiveness journey was really, really underway. And I had more compassion for my mom. And then when she died, oh my goodness, that was a whole new learning journey.
Whole new trauma,
because then I felt guilty and shame for all of the anger for being, I'm going to say, being a bitch to her when I was growing
up. Your behaviours,
And then but it was like,
you have a different perspective, right?
Your
perspective of understanding your mother, being compassionate, you know, feeling unconditional love, and you know what you all described. You know, it's you started to look at your mother through another filter, through a different perspective, right?
As a human,
and you looked at all the positives and what she might have suffered, what she might have gone through, how she probably never done her healing journey.
Yeah, her childhood was not great. She had
you young as well.
Yeah,
you three kids, and how her husband was traveling for work a lot of time. You know, your father. And so when you shifted that, then you kind of began to feel guilty for a different reason.
Yeah.
Like, I only did this for 3 years. I wish I could have done it, or I should have done it earlier when I was younger.
Yeah.
Maybe I would have had even better bond and better relationship with my mother.
Because now she's gone, and now I can't ever redeem or repair with her directly, because that opportunity has now been taken away from me. And that, oh my goodness, that sent me into a spiral of depression when I was 30 years old.
Yeah, it's very understandable. Mm. And like, first of all, thank you so much for sharing, for being vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because, you know, through this experience, a lot of people can relate.
Yeah.
From all walks of life, you know, can relate to everything. And I really appreciate how you have shared like an innermost deep process, because you were not just like, oh, I was there and now I'm here, and it's like I did a bit of work. No, you kind of delved really, really deep.
Yeah.
It was ugly. It was messy.
Terribly
it
ugly.
It was a lot of crying, a lot of sadness, it was very challenging. And there was a process and a part in your life where it was very self-destructive.
Oh, massively.
You know, self-sabotaging, right? And so that was age 30, you went through the process of, like, you know, depression, and because of the guilt and maybe
maybe
unforgiveness and shame and you know, resentment and all of that.
And I was angry all over I never had the mom that I wanted.
How soon did you become aware of this? Did it take you long to wallow into that kind of state of being, or did you came out of it and objectively subjectify yourself and look at yourself, kind of to understand, oh, this is what I'm doing. I'm spiraling out of control again. What can I do about it? How long did that take?
That took a few years as well, actually, if I'm honest, because the anger had started all over again, because I never had my mom when I was younger. Then now I felt like I had a version of the mom.
And then she was taken away.
And then she was taken away. So I was so angry. I was angry with everything for quite a while. And I...
What about your day-to-day things? Were you easily ticked off to lose your temper?
I think I was running on trying to feel good about myself by keeping a nice home, working hard, serving the children. I was married at that time. Being the best wife. I was trying to be the best externally so that I could just feel a little bit better about myself underneath. So I was constantly giving, again, the people-pleasing thing, which led to me feeling
all sorts of other problems internally.
Yeah, resentful,
exhausted.
And, I would be quite irritable sometimes and quite snappy, and then I'd feel guilty about that. So it was all a very low energy of a cycle that I didn't see at the time, but I knew it didn't feel good. I knew it felt
because you were busy with life, right?
Yeah.
Husband, children, business, work, all of that.
Yeah.
School runs and all the other things.
Yeah. At that point, I wasn't a business owner. I was working. I had three jobs at that point, trying to just continually
provide.
Provide. Yeah.
Well, listen, life gets in the way.
Right? Yeah, sure.
Life gets in the way, you know, we don't pay bills, we, you know. But the thing is, in that process, you learn a lot. And I'm sure today you probably look back at your life experiences, your human experiences, and you probably, because I know you now, we're friends, you probably say it's a blessing.
Yeah.
All of my experiences I've had are blessings, and I'm very grateful that I've had them. Otherwise, I wouldn't have become who I am today.
Absolutely. And I wouldn't, even if I had a magic wand and I could wave it and those things were not to ever have happened, I really wouldn't do that because they were meant for me. It's my life path. And I have learned more through the painful experiences in my life than I've ever learned from any of the great things. It's like the duality of life, isn't it? That you can't experience the wonderfulness without feeling the opposite, which is pain and discomfort. And I've experienced some incredible wonderfulness in my life. I have some incredible friends and incredible people around me. And would I have experienced this at the level that I have, which has been euphoric moments, if I hadn't have had all this? Because it's the comparison, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So would I change anything if I could? No, I really would not, and I can say that quite honestly. It was meant to happen. Everyone's got their life path and journey, and this one's mine.
Yeah, I loved it, and even how you described it, it's very relatable to the audience, to viewers and listeners.
Yeah.
And We've spoken a few times, and there is one funny thing. What does your son ask you when you have your video calls and telephone calls about, Mum, what's in your head?
So my son, he will say to me, and he said this several times, and he said, Mum, he said, what does your life actually look like? He said, is it multicoloured unicorns jumping over pink and blue fluffy clouds? And I said, yeah, how do you know? And he said, well, it's not real. That's not real life. And my reply was, it's real for me. And he said, well, you're deluded. If that's the case, then I will stay deluded because I quite like it over here.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant.
I mean,
if you can actually kind of just take a snapshot of your overall human experience to date, where you started and where you are today, you have that in your head. That's your human experience.
Yeah.
But I also know you now as a friend and a business owner and, you know, podcaster and all the other achievements and accolades and things that you, all the amazing things that you do.
Yeah.
It's not far off from your real three-dimensional human experience as well. It's like rainbows and clouds and unicorns and multicolored confetti. There's celebrations and flowers and roses, flowers coming out of your ears. It's incredible. So it's quite kind of like a night and day if you look at it. And so, what are some of the other tools that you have utilized in your own life that you can share with the audience that if they choose to apply some of these other techniques, they could potentially not only begin to experience unicorns and rainbows in their head, but also have amazing experience in their external world and thrive in life?
That's a big, big question. And it has been a process, it's been a journey. And in amongst that has also been, you know, some humps and bumps, but that's cool, that's okay, because I look at the humps and bumps as, okay, what is this showing me? This challenge, there's a solution and there's a rainbow at the end of it. So I look at challenges in a much different way. I look at them as
an opportunity
for me to find a solution and to grow. I will always grow and so will everyone else. When we look at a challenge in a different way, then we will always only ever grow from that. But I think the biggest journey for me, the biggest lesson has been learning to like myself and then learning to love myself. And the way that I have done that is whenever I hear this internal voice inside my mind saying, well, you know, that hasn't worked out for you because you're not good enough, or that hasn't worked out for you because you're you didn't do this when you should have, or you don't look great in that dress because you've put on a stone, just for example. Whenever I hear myself, and I've been doing this for years and years and years, whenever I hear that internal voice that is in my mind, and it's my voice, it's not anyone else's voice that I hear, it's my voice, I pause. And I do, and I teach this to people that I work with, power in the pause. 10 seconds, it's not a long time, but it's a long enough time to be able to be aware of what this internal dialogue is saying. And every time I hear this internal dialogue saying anything mean, me saying anything mean about myself, I pause. And I'm not, that's not actually true. And I will just switch it up on top of its head. So if the voice is saying to me, well, you know, you don't deserve to have that because you're not good enough, I will turn that around and give it an upgrade. And I will be, and I will say, I do actually deserve to have this because I am good enough. I am a good person. I'm kind and I'm compassionate. And I do deserve to have that. And this is being the biggest significant shift for me over time. And I rarely have those internal...
You catch yourself.
Catch myself.
More frequently, yeah.
Catch yourself. And I catch myself so fast now that it happens without me having to do the power in the pause.
It's become like an automatic habit.
Yeah.
But... What you would I be correct to understand, when you first started this process, you were kind of more paying attention and becoming aware, like, kind of, okay, this is the technique, so I'm going to observe myself, I'm going to listen to my inner conversation, I'm going to listen to this voice and reframe it, it's not the truth, and reframe, cognitive reframing. And then through repetition, You now, as you say, like, you don't have to make too much effort. It has become effortless because you've actually changed your brain.
I've changed my brain. I have rewired it, and neuroplasticity has taken place.
Yeah.
And that's how, and then because of the work that you do and the work that I do with people, I am living proof that this stuff actually works.
Absolutely.
But it's about choices. You've got to make a choice to want to be your own. Be your own champion, be your own knight in shining armor, because no one's going to come galloping in on a white horse and do the work for you. And would you want them to? You know, they might do it wrong.
Absolutely.
Only you know what's right for you. But I would say that's been the biggest, most fundamental personal development that I've been able to do for myself. It's just that when I hear that voice, my voice, if it's been mean, I pause, I completely tip it upside down, retell myself that new narrative that I've created that is serving me, that is kind and compassionate, that is taking me to where my goal is, or where my next, where I'm advancing towards. And that, I've noticed, has... the ripple effect has gone through to all of the areas of my life.
Unbelievable. Yeah, that's brilliant. I love what you just shared, because it's not a complex technique. It's quite simple.
Oh, it's simple.
But
through
repetition and over time,
it
becomes very, very powerful and very significant part of your transformation, of your healing journey. And we did speak about this, and you did some work on yourself, I did on myself, and maybe we work also with clients. on healing the inner child as well, right?
I love the inner child.
And, you know, there's like various techniques that we can apply.
I'm going to pop this on my list for a future podcast.
But one of the things that is interesting to know is that because everything is interlinked, you know, the mind is not a separate, the body is not a separate from emotions. It's all interlinked. The mind, body, and emotions are experienced often in the body. So very much when we feel the physiological pain in the in the chest, maybe in the throat, maybe solar plexus, maybe like twisting nuts in your belly.
I feel it in my lower abdomen.
Yeah. So it could be almost like a menstrual pain.
Yes, kind of it thing. Is. It's like a spasm.
Yeah. And so this is the inner child.
Yeah.
And I just want to mention to viewers and listeners, and then you can share your experience and maybe some techniques. I always say, like, when this has been happening for years, now you're an adult in a body of a 30-year-old, 40, 50, 60-year-old, that inner child is presenting itself in this physical pain. And because you've been trying to suppress it and hide away from it and not acknowledge it for all those years, for decades, maybe the pain is intensified. So what it actually requires is for you to acknowledge, to say, hey, if you've got kids or grandkids, and imagine your child has been playing outside and they have fallen down, and, you know, maybe it was summer and they were wearing shorts or a dress, and now they've hurt their knee, and now the knee is bleeding. What the child needs in that moment is a warm embrace, unconditional love, and they need you to hold them to say, you know what, mommy is here.
Yeah.
I love you unconditionally. It's going to be okay. Mm. Right? So that inner child, when you feel that pain, you just come out and say, you know, I acknowledge you. I feel you. I see you. And you just give that inner child that unconditional love. And as you build this strong bond and relationship with your inner child, you're going to begin to experience a lot of release better external experiences, regardless of your age.
Yeah. I fully agree with that. And with the work that I do, and I'm working with people, we all do the inner child work. So we'll go back to a time and a place where the inner child is there. Like one of the most prominent memories, so it will typically be in the bedroom, normally, like in your bed, in your little safe space, and go back and go through, imagine yourself going through the door as the person you are now, and then meeting, going to the inner child, getting down to the inner child level, and looking your inner child, yourself, in the eye from where you are today, and meeting the inner child where it's at, and just saying, I've got you.
I
love you. You are safe. I'm sorry I abandoned you. I'm sorry I left you there. But I'm back now.
I didn't acknowledge you. I didn't see you.
I didn't hear you.
Yeah.
I abandoned and I rejected you. But I'm here now. I've got you. You're safe.
Amazing.
And that, oh my goodness. I feel quite emotional now, just because it's a beautiful thing to do.
Yeah.
And when I'm working with people and they get to this place, if they haven't started to get emotional at that point, they certainly do there. And I love that, because it's all of this energy releasing.
Absolutely.
And then it's embrace the inner child.
Absolutely.
Bring them into your heart space and just give them that love and that. Be the parent.
And then it's a continuous journey of doing that. Yeah. It's not just one off.
Not just the one time.
Yeah.
As you say quite rightly, you know, it's about repetition, and the mind learns new habits and behaviours after around 66 days or more. If you have to do that 66 times or 660 times, it's okay, because everything will be, none of it is a wasted time and energy. It's all positive, and it's all helping you to heal and overcome and advance towards where you want to be. And it's just a beautiful thing to do. The inner child work I really, truly love it. And also, it's so connecting with the wounded inner child.
Yes.
And also connecting with the playfulness of the inner child. So my playful inner child is probably about 7 or 8 years old, and I love it. I've got a very immature sense of humour. I find the silliest things funny, and that is my inner child. It might not be everyone else's cup of tea, but that's okay. But I think that's what keeps people, it keeps you young and vibrant. And
absolutely.
And also being around children as well and just seeing that wonderfulness
their
in
innocence,
them.
Innocence,
yeah,
right?
It's incredible.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, my scientific research has shown peer-reviewed papers where, and myself and other people, that they say, well, humans are born with 100% unconditional self-love, self-confidence. It's at 100% self-worth. No child feels inadequate.
No.
And all of the other kind of gets diluted and chipped away from birth to about age 7, and then also later on, if there is any left after age 7, later on in young adulthood and later on in adult life. That's why, you know, it's very important to do the inner child work, and also all the other work that you said you did on yourself, and I did too. So now, today you have various kind of businesses. Could you talk more about that, and what sort of work do you do today?
So today I'm a property portfolio holder, and I love property. So that is...
You invest in property,
right? I invest in property. I buy properties and do them up and then rent them out, or sometimes sell them. I am a certified RTT hypnotherapist. I'm a mindset coach and a Reiki master and a published author of The Fear Recode, which I published that in December last year. So
wow.
That's
congratulations.
Big. Thank you so much.
Amazing.
And I feel like everything I do works really, it was never a plan to kind of have everything kind of come together, but I've got a 12-year background in property where I built a portfolio. I was a co-founder and co-host of a networking meeting. I used to coach new property investors the different strategies. And that led me to do the mindset work, because I felt that people, you can teach people 100 strategies, but if they don't have their mindset right,
That's
they
the foundation.
Get in
it?
Their own way, not feeling good enough,
absolutely.
Limiting beliefs. So I thought, why my energy and time is going to be better served here to help. Not there's loads of people that are way better than me at teaching strategies. I can teach the mindset so the strategies click in together. So that's what I tend to do. I tend to work mostly with people in business, and but mostly people in property because of my
your
knowledge
background.
And background.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. And you mentioned your book. Where can people find your book?
Well, it's on Amazon, and it's called The Fear Recode. I launched it on the 13th of December last year, actually. So I spent a whole year last year writing it. And I tried to encompass as much as I could, but everything that Alden and I have been speaking about. So taking yourself from a fearful mindset to a fearless mindset. And there's practical tools in there as well. And it did actually get to number one in new releases in mental health, in three categories actually. Mental health, addiction and recovery, and alternative therapies. And it reached number two Amazon bestseller in mental health.
Wow.
And I was blown away by that.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
You should be very proud of yourself.
I am. I'm very proud of myself. I mean, English was never my strong point at school, and I wrote it all myself. I had a proofreader and editor to check it and go over everything. So yeah, I'm really super proud of myself.
That's
and it's
brilliant.
It's all about kind of trying to help people. And if that book helps just, you know, a handful of people, then, you know, then that's my work is done there. But it's knowing that it will be around forever and people can pick it up. It's
that's
a book
wonderful.
That you can pick up and put down and pick up and put down and go back to as well.
Yeah, it's like a guide to keep
yes.
revisiting.
Yes,
yeah,
and I find the best books that I've ever read, I don't just read them once. I continue.
It's not like for entertainment,
no,
right?
It's a process. Like The Alchemist, I don't know if you've read that.
Paulo Coelho, but yes.
I have read that so many times.
So have I.
And each time I get something new from it, and I wanted that to be in my book as well.
That's brilliant, brilliant. And where can people find you if they like to get in touch with you, social media, your website?
Yes, so my website is kerriamcollective.com. I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn and TikTok and YouTube and Instagram. Although my Instagram, like yourself, I am not able to access it at the moment because I got hacked. But everything is still there. It's not being tampered with. I just need to figure out how to get back
in. So social media, Kerri Mountjoy. And your website is
kerriamcollective.com.
Kerriamcollective.com. Brilliant. Yeah. And links to your podcast, to your social media, and your book is on your website, correct?
It's on my website, and it's also on Linktree as well.
Brilliant. And if people want to sort of go to Amazon and just type in your full name in a search engine of Amazon, they will get access to your book if they don't remember the title.
Yes,
so what we will do, in this podcast, we will put the links of your website, of your social media and your book. So if people want to get in touch with you, they follow you, they want to hire you as a coach or as a public speaker in one of their events, they can get in touch with you. And also, Kerri, she's coming to my live event in March the 3rd in Manchester 2024. So 3rd of March, Manchester 2024. I'm teaching a workshop. Kerri's going to be there with some of her friends and colleagues, and I'm looking forward to. And also, for the listeners and viewers, Kerri and I, we will be back on her podcast in the very near future. And also, we are discussing various strategies, how we can utilize our synergetic approach and kind of our missions align, right?
Yeah.
So we can then create maybe some digital products, courses, maybe some workshops, in-person events as well. And we can kind of achieve the same objective, which is to help humanity. Perhaps we come from slightly different angle, but I feel there's a lot of synergy. And this is what humanity needs today.
Absolutely.
More and more kind of tools so they can feel empowered. And if they choose to apply, they say knowledge is power.